Hello, everyone. I'm going to be reading from the Jesus Trilogy, the second book in the Jesus Trilogy, which is called Beliefs, Emotions, and the Creation of Reality. This will be chapter 4, How Beliefs About Others Affect Your Reality. Your beliefs about yourself affect how you feel about yourself, how you experience others, and what kinds of people you attract. Your beliefs about others are equally important in determining what kinds of experiences you will have with others and in relationship. The beliefs you hold about those around you determine how you will relate to them and how they will experience you. So let's take a closer look at this great mystery of how you create your experience of others and consequently your experience of reality. I think that this book explores how our beliefs color our experience of reality and how those beliefs shape our reactions to reality and how they can distort and leave out things or put things into reality that aren't there. So it's very important that we understand that we are operating on the basis of the beliefs that are running through our thought stream, because they do affect our reality. They affect our experience of reality. I wouldn't say they affect all of reality, although they do can have some effect on reality, as we will see today, because certainly your beliefs about other people affect how other people experience you and therefore how they respond to you. So there is just a natural give and take that goes on between you and reality or the environment that is colored to a great extent by what you believe about yourself and what you believe about others. Your beliefs about people in general, as well as your beliefs about specific people, shape your experience of them. As for people in general, what is it you believe? Do you believe people are mean or nice? Do you believe they like you or not? Do you believe they are trustworthy or not? And of course, you believe different things about different groups of people. You have beliefs about poor people, beliefs about rich people, beliefs about children, beliefs about teenagers, about Christians and Jews, about Americans and every other nationality, about the different races, about women, about men, about the elderly, about attractive and unattractive people, beliefs about intelligent and not so intelligent people, beliefs about overweight and thin people, and on and on. That's a lot of beliefs to be aware of and examine. So I think the point of listing all these beliefs, as if you didn't know it, in a sense, we don't know it. We're not that aware that we have beliefs constantly about everything and everyone, and that we categorize people. And so this long list of who we have beliefs about is trying to emphasize that we are just loaded down with our beliefs, and they are coming at us constantly, influencing how we see other people. No matter how the mind divides humanity up conceptually, the ego has an opinion about those people, and it believes its own opinions. Do you see how artificial these groupings and boundaries are? How they're made up by the mind? How can opinions about imaginary groups be anything but imaginary? Not real, not true. And isn't it interesting how your mind has an opinion about everyone and every group instantly? That's what minds do. They form opinions instantly, and you instantly believe your opinions. Opinions are beliefs, and like beliefs, opinions often go unquestioned and unexamined. I found this so humorous when I started to realize how sure I was of my own opinions, how automatically sure I was, and how quickly I formed opinions under any circumstances without any information, really. So it's pretty funny when you watch that happen with the mind and you're onto it, you can no longer hold your opinions so strongly, and you can't hold other people's opinions so strongly either. They just come out of nowhere. They're just made up, and very few people's opinions are based on facts and information. Any of your beliefs can and will shape your behavior towards someone, especially if you're not aware of your beliefs and their effect on you. The more aware you are, the less your beliefs unconsciously shape your behavior. And since beliefs can be especially destructive to relationships, the less your beliefs interfere in your relationships, the better it is for everyone. Unconscious beliefs limit your ability to behave flexibly and respond naturally and freshly to the person in front of you. Your beliefs limit your choices about how you behave. For instance, if you don't trust men, you will behave as if you don't trust them, instead of in the many other ways you might if you did trust them. You won't be free to be more open toward a man, which is more functional than being closed. Being more open and trusting doesn't mean you won't be discriminating and careful, because if you're very present to what is actually happening in the moment, your intuition will let you know if you are safe with someone or not. The ego's beliefs are its rules for how to live. The trouble is that the ego's rules and formulas don't take into account what is actually happening. Approaching every situation with the same set of rules and formulas is not going to give you very good results. And yet, that is what living according to your beliefs is like. Living this way is like wearing the same clothes every day of the year, no matter what the weather is like. Just as you adjust your clothes to the temperature, you have to adjust your behavior to the present moment. If you are living in your illusory reality instead of reality, you won't make those adjustments. And that's pretty much what conditioning does and what conditioning is. It's a set of rules and formulas for how we are supposed to behave. We gathered it throughout our history, through our conclusions of past experiences and what other people taught. So we learned how we're supposed to behave under given circumstances. But those rules are only so helpful. I mean, it is nice to say thank you. That's a good rule to have. But there are so many instances when those rules and formulas don't serve us and are inadequate to the situation. We don't have a formula for how to live, and yet the mind pretends that we do by giving us conditioned responses for how to behave. The mind loves to lump people in categories. It's simpler that way. It's also just how this primitive aspect of the brain, the ego, works. It sees things as either black or white, good or bad, trustworthy or untrustworthy, with nothing in between, even though the simplest of things, not to mention human beings, is multifaceted, complex, and mysterious. Oh, I see that I jumped ahead and I skipped a paragraph here. We were talking about how sometimes men can't be trusted. If you have that belief that it will affect your experience of men. And so this previous paragraph said, sometimes men can be trusted and sometimes they can't. To return to our example, the belief that men can't be trusted is untrue because this only applies to some men. A belief that is true only some of the time is hardly going to be useful in guiding your behavior. And I would add also that even men who are not so trustworthy are not always untrustworthy. So the mind tends to make global assumptions about people. People are either black or white, good or bad. And that's what this paragraph also continues to say. The mind loves to lump people in categories. It's simpler that way. It's also just how this primitive aspect of the brain, the ego, works. It sees things as either black or white, good or bad, trustworthy or untrustworthy, with nothing in between. Even though even the simplest of things, not to mention human beings, is multifaceted, complex, and mysterious. Your beliefs about others not only limit your flexibility with others and your ability to be with others freshly in the moment, but also create a particular experience of reality that reinforces your beliefs. Just as beliefs about yourself become self-fulfilling prophecies, so do beliefs about others. Let's take a look at how the belief that men can't be trusted can become a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you are a woman who doesn't trust men, you will expect men to treat you badly, lie to you, hurt you, or betray you. If you feel this way inside, you will be looking out for yourself in whatever relationship you're in. You will be on guard, and love won't be flowing easily from you to the other person. If that's the case, then love is not so likely to be flowing toward you either. Or if your partner is expressing love, either you won't be able to receive his love, or it won't register. Your filtering system will notice the times he isn't being attentive, or the ways he seems untrustworthy, not the ways he is. Because your ego wants its beliefs upheld, your unconscious mind might even compel you to do and say things that are unkind and cause your partner to withdraw or be unkind in retaliation without realizing your role in this. If you are unkind, insecure, defensive, or cold in relationship because of some belief, that inner climate is bound to sabotage your chance for a healthy relationship. Who you are likely to end up with is someone who's willing to be with someone who is unloving, insecure, defensive, or cold, because he needs to be with someone, anyone, rather than because he loves you. This can't be a satisfying relationship for long, and your belief becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Alternately, if you distrust men and therefore expect men to treat you badly, you're likely to accept such a relationship. Here's how that works. If you believe that men treat women badly, but you don't want to be alone, you will accept bad treatment from someone because that will seem normal. When you don't expect anything better from a partner, you will accept the behavior that you expect because you don't expect to find a man who treats you well. This happens all the time in relationships. If you set the bar low and don't expect to be loved and treated well, you will settle for a relationship that has very little love. On the other hand, if you expect to be loved and treated well, you don't stay with someone who doesn't love you and treat you well. This is how beliefs limit and shape people's relationships. And we see this all the time, don't we, in domestic violence, in examples of battered women who stay in relationships. And we often wonder, why do they do that? So there are deep psychological reasons why they do that, of course. Your expectations and beliefs can limit possible relationships and cause problems in your relationships in another way. If you require that another person look or be or act a certain way before you will love him or her, you are greatly limiting your chances for love. Finding someone who meets your specific requirements will be difficult, if not impossible. And if you're already in a relationship, your expectations and ideas about how you want your partner to be will only cause conflict between you. So this is the more common way that beliefs interfere with relationships. we have a long list of what we expect or want a partner to be for us. We want him to look a certain way, to act a certain way, to have a certain amount of money, a job, or we have very specific requirements that we put on other people before we agree internally to open to them and to love them. And when we're in a relationship, we do the same thing. We withdraw our love when our partner isn't living up to our beliefs about what he should be acting as. And we give love when he matches our beliefs. So we dole our love out according to what we believe he should be for us. And that's a very egocentric point of view, isn't it? To think that the other person needs to be a certain way before we will love him. We are really the only one who loses in that. Because when we close our heart and choose not to love, that means we are not feeling love. We're not having the experience of love, which is the ultimate experience as a human being. It is what truly and deeply makes us happy. And so when we withhold love from others, we are withholding it from ourselves. You just can't win with beliefs. Whether your expectations are high or low, they will cause problems because life is not designed to meet your desires and expectations. Life has its own purpose and its own plan. Life brings you the people it does for many reasons, which you may never understand. Your only choice is whether or not to love who life brings you. The mind has its ideas about how relationships should be and how others should behave, but these ideas only create suffering for everyone. Love is possible only when you drop all ideas and beliefs and meet another just as he or she is, showing up in the moment, fresh and new. Any ideas you bring into that moment about that person or about anything else will only interfere with experiencing that rich, unique moment with that person. Love is experienced anytime you are truly present to the person in front of you without any ideas, beliefs, or expectations. This is so important, isn't it? It's a summary, or this is the instruction in a nutshell. Love is experienced anytime you are truly present to the person in front of you without any ideas, beliefs, or expectations. That's the goal, to just be with people from that place of silence, of receptivity, of openness, of love. That is the place of love. Love is not the result of getting someone to fit your ideas or finding someone who does. If you wait for life to fit your beliefs and desires, you will be waiting forever. And so it is. So love is not the result of getting someone to fit your ideas or finding someone who does. This is quite a revelation, isn't it? Because that most people are going around trying to find someone who will fit their desires and their ideas. And that is not a recipe for love. It doesn't mean that life won't bring you someone who fits you perfectly. And that person may very well meet a lot of your desires and a lot of your ideas. But if you try to make someone fit into those, that's another story. Moving beyond your beliefs about others allows you to experience them as they really are. Then it's possible to feel the love that naturally flows between one being and another, when beliefs no longer impede that flow. Love is your true nature, and only beliefs stand in the way of experiencing your true nature and someone else's, because beliefs keep you in the ego's illusory reality. some beliefs can override or counteract ones that limit or inhibit love. They are beliefs that would come from your true nature if it spoke to you, as the voice in your head does. Such beliefs reflect certain universal principles and truths. Here are a few examples. You are a unique and precious expression of the divine. I honor and respect your uniqueness. How you are different from me is a gift, and as it is meant to be. You are lovable just the way you are. You don't need to change for me to love you. You are not in this world to fulfill my needs or for my purposes, but for your own purpose, which I honor and support. You have your own lessons, and I support you in making your own choices and learning what you need to learn from them. So if you had a partner who viewed you and your relationship in those ways, that would be great, wouldn't it? Wouldn't that partner be easy for you to love? Isn't that what we all want from our partner? Is that kind of acceptance and freedom to be who we are and to live our life and learn our lessons in the way we need to do that? For better or worse, really. Any belief or idea that allows love to flow within you and within those who are relating, you are relating to, is a belief that is very close to the truth about life, close to reality, and therefore can be helpful in counteracting the untruths the ego produces. So we can use our own intellect, our own power of reason and thinking to create beliefs that are more true, that counteract the negative and unhelpful beliefs that are part of our conditioning that undermine love. Our conditioning is bound to undermine love because it comes from the ego. The ego is not about love. The ego is about getting what it wants for itself. So the egoic state of consciousness is not a state that love can exist in. We have to move out of the egoic state of consciousness to experience love, and that is what life teaches us. We all want love, and so eventually we do all learn to move out of the egoic state of consciousness, to move out of that preoccupation with me, myself, and I, and my desires and my needs, and what will you do for me. We eventually learn that that way of relating to people doesn't work. And because we want love, because that is intrinsically important to all human beings, we discover that it's in giving love and in allowing people to be as they are, in accepting them, in loving them as they are, and allowing them to be as they are, that we find love. That we are able to have the kind of relationship that we so long for. Some beliefs are truer than others. The closer your beliefs are to the truth about life, the more you will feel the peace and the love and the joy and gratitude and contentment of your true nature. A test of how true or useful a belief is whether it blocks love or allows love to flow. Beliefs that contribute to the ego's illusory reality interfere with love and make you feel bad and contracted inside, while beliefs that represent life more truly allow love to flow and make you feel good and expansive inside. The more time you spend in the present moment without your thoughts, the more you're able to know life as it truly is, as your true self experiences it. If you spend enough time being fully present in the moment, you discover the truth about life, that it is good, trustworthy, wondrous, miraculous, and divinely and intelligently guided. Only your personal, illusory reality keeps you from realizing this. Your beliefs cause you to misperceive life. Once the lens of your perception is cleared of the beliefs that distort your vision, you can see life as it really is. Beliefs like those just listed override the ego's erroneous beliefs and take you to the experience of the truth. They point to something that is not a belief, but rather a universal truth, which when realized results in peace, love, and harmony within you and in your relationships. That is how you know something is true, because it results in peace, love, and harmony. That is the test. If you apply this test to your beliefs, you will see that not many of them pass the test. So I think this is so important, a really wonderful measuring stick. How you know something is true is because it results in peace, love, and harmony. If it doesn't result in peace, love, and harmony, then it's not true. You don't need it. It's not useful. You can just let it go. You don't need your beliefs. What a radical idea that is. Your beliefs only get in the way of reality, which is the experience of peace, love, and harmony. That is what reality is. Just that. Reality is the experience of peace, love, and harmony. Let's delve a little more deeply into how your beliefs about others affect your reality, because seeing the truth about your beliefs frees you from the damage they do to your relationships. Yes, seeing the truth is enough to free you. Nothing more is needed. But there is a lot of examination to be done, since the mind is full of lies and partial truths. Your beliefs and ideas about the specific people in your life have an enormous impact on relationship with them, as do their beliefs and ideas about you. More often than not, what makes or breaks a relationship are the beliefs and ideas each person has about the other and about the relationship, rather than compatibility or other factors. If you have positive beliefs and ideas about someone, you will be open to that person, and love will flow easily. But if you have judgments about someone, those will taint your relationship and interfere with seeing the good in that person and with loving him or her. Based on this, you can imagine how many more opportunities for relationship someone who is not judgmental has than someone who is. Judgments are the number one reason relationships feel difficult, fail, or never get off the ground to start with. And every single one of your judgments is made up by your mind. It wasn't handed down to you from God, because God is the antithesis of judgment, despite how God is sometimes portrayed. Your judgments come from a darker place, a primitive place. If you are having a problem with someone, you need to examine where the problem lies. Is it in the other person or in your own judgments? Perhaps the problem also lies in the other person's judgments. Without judgments and stories about someone, is there a problem? There may be differences that need to be worked out, but the mind often creates unnecessary problems. Some important questions to ask about your judgments and beliefs about someone are, is this always true or just sometimes true? I can guarantee you that the answer to that question is that it isn't always true, because pretty much nothing is always true. Is the opposite also sometimes true? And I can guarantee you that the answer to that is yes, the opposite is no doubt also true. Do I really know this about this person, or am I assuming this? And that's a great question as well, because we assume so much. We don't know what's going on in the other person. We don't know what it's like to be that other person. Am I just pretending to be able to read this person's mind? And that's what we do all the time. If you investigate your judgments and beliefs, you discover that the mind makes a lot of assumptions and pretends to know things it doesn't actually know. The ego does this because it wants to feel superior and right. It also does this because it loves to tell stories that cause problems and stir up emotions. The ego loves drama, and it doesn't trust love, so it does what it can to sabotage love. So, in case you think that there's something in you that sabotages love, guess what? You're right. We all have an ego that is subtly sabotaging love, or not so subtly sometimes. The more important question is it helpful to the relationship to assume whatever I'm assuming? Judgments come from the ego and are in service to it. So questioning your judgments and their value in general is important. Once you see how useless and damaging judgments are to relationships, you will quickly learn to disregard them. That judgments close hearts should be pretty obvious. Judgments come from a closed heart, so naturally they also cause others to close their hearts. Judgments are a perfect example of an internal reality or climate determining one's external reality. When you openly judge others, you will be judged in return, as predictably as the night follows the day. Even if you keep your judgments to yourself, the internal climate created by your closed heart will result in others closing their hearts to you, even if they don't know why your heart is closed. Like attracts like. Judgment attracts judgment. A closed heart attracts and causes closed hearts, not open ones. Let's take a look at how the judgment, "You don't pay attention to me," can become a self-fulfilling prophecy. This judgment, like all judgments, closes the heart, both of the person who holds it and of the person who receives it. The last thing that the person who receives this judgment wants to do is give the person the loving attention he or she is demanding. Prophecy fulfilled. Judging someone is a really poor strategy for getting what you want. Judgments backfire every time. So it's funny that we don't realize this more clearly, what a bad strategy judgments are. We really seem to think that our judgments are effective because we keep using them to try to manipulate people and change people without examining them and really questioning the effectiveness of them. They just feel righteous and right within us, but that is the ego's creation. That righteousness and that sense of rightness is built into judgments. That's part of the ego's illusory reality that forces us, in a sense, causes us to act out of judgment and create the ego's truth that life is terrible, that other people are terrible, that life should be different, that other people should be different. Our judgments themselves create the experience that other people are a problem or that life is a problem. So judgments are one of the main ways that the ego keeps the illusory reality that sustains it in place. So they are very important to examine, because in examining them and seeing that they are false and not helpful, we begin to bust through that illusory reality. We poke a hole in that illusory reality. Excuse me. We poke a hole in that illusory reality so that it is less powerful, it has less control over us. even if you don't say, you don't pay enough attention to me, your closed heart alone creates the experience of not having enough love. No one else but you can actually make you feel love or feel loved. That is solely up to you. Love is an experience that happens within you. It is an experience of your heart being open. If your heart is open, you won't need love from another person. It's only when your heart is closed that you feel a need for love from another. In holding this judgment, you don't pay enough attention to me, you create the very experience you're complaining about, a lack of love. Judgments close the heart and leave you bereft of love. But you do this to yourself. As long as your heart is closed, you will never get enough love from someone else to satisfy you. You can have your judgments, or you can have love, but you cannot have both. If you have beliefs about your partner that keep your heart closed, you might as well not be with that person, as love will eventually disappear until you move beyond those judgments and begin, or rather, unless you move beyond those judgments and begin to affirm something more positive about your partner. Relationships cannot survive ongoing judgment. Even one judgment held by one person strongly enough can destroy a relationship. I wrote quite a bit about this in my book, Choosing Love. There was a whole chapter on judgment because it is such a powerful poison in relationships. Judgment, like poison, you only need a little bit of it over time to be deadly to a relationship. And so what seems rather harmless, a judgment here, a judgment there, it seems fairly harmless. Everybody does it, and your partner no doubt does it to you as well. It seems normal. But over time, those judgments eat away at the relationship. They undercut it, they undermine it, they kill it, just like poison does over time. So unless you can turn around your internal experience of your partner, then it bodes very badly for relationships, and this is what happens. And I've had enough of that myself to know how easily it happens that you can ruin a relationship by simply being judgmental and closing your heart. Fortunately, since any judgment is just an idea in your own mind, you can do something about that judgment before it distorts your perception of your partner and damages your relationship irretrievably. You can catch your judgments when they form and say no to them. This is one of the secrets of those in happy relationships. The individuals don't engage in judgment, either secretly within themselves or within their relationship. Does this sound too idealistic? Not engaging in judgment is just good emotional hygiene. Just because most people believe their judgments are useful and not harmful doesn't make them so. Judgments are useless and very harmful, and the more people who realize this, the better. If people understood this and practiced non-judgment, it would dramatically change the world you live in. There is no room in relationships for judgment, because judgments leave no room for love. I have certainly learned this in my many long years and many long relationships, and I can say that I am honestly in a relationship now where our self-images and ideas and beliefs about each other are mutually positive. And that I notice at times that my mind wants to go to a judgment or could go to a judgment, but I know where that leads. it leads to a story that ends up being a new negative self-image of your partner that just grows and grows and grows. If you let a judgment turn into a story that you repeat mentally over and over again to yourself, inwardly, even inwardly, not even just expressing to your partner, that's even worse. But in your own mind, if you repeat a judgment over and over to yourself and create a story around that, you will fall out of love with your partner. And you won't know what hit you. You won't even realize that you did that, that you created that by focusing on the negative. Everyone has faults, or you could say lesser strengths. If you dwell on someone's weaknesses or so-called faults, then that is all you'll notice. So if, for instance, you have the belief that your partner is lazy, and you feed and strengthen that belief by giving that thought your attention, you will begin to see your partner from the "he's lazy" lens and not from any other perspective. His other qualities will be overshadowed by the image that he is lazy. Your unconscious mind will look for ways to prove this belief and filter out evidence to the contrary. Because what happens is that the ego always wants to be right, even if it kills love, even if it hurts others, even if it hurts yourself. The ego would rather be right than have love. The mind doesn't acknowledge the whole picture in the stories it tells about someone, and when it focuses in on a negative trait, the relationship can take a turn for the worse. When what you give your attention to really matters. If you're going to focus on a belief about your partner, focus on one that enhances love. This is what people in successful relationships do. They tell positive stories about the person they are with. He is such a wonderful person. He does so many things well. He is always considerate. Now, he may not always be considerate, but when you believe this, you notice when he's considerate, and you filter out when he isn't, because your unconscious mind wants your beliefs to be right. So that's pretty clever, isn't it? If you manufacture positive beliefs and replace any negative beliefs with positive ones, your unconscious mind will want to prove that belief correct. Having positive beliefs about your partner supports love and helps you overlook the things you don't like. Having negative beliefs about your partner does the opposite. They undermine love and keep you focused on what you don't like. It's so important to be aware of the beliefs you have about others and to keep them positive. Focusing on someone's positive traits is not hiding your head in the sand. Rather, doing this counteracts the mind's tendency to focus on the negative, which creates problems where there are none. The problems created by judgments and negative images of someone are illusory problems, not real ones. Judgments and negative images break apart relationships unnecessarily. Relationships are challenging enough without causing more difficulties and conflicts by holding detrimental beliefs and judgments. Watch your thoughts about your partner and be careful what you believe. What are the stories you tell about your partner silently to yourself or out loud to your friends and to your partner? What subtle negative images do you hold of your partner in your mind's eye? And how do those images affect your relationship? This is the illusory reality you create and live in with your partner. And your partner has his or her stories and images about you that create his or her illusory reality, which your partner lives in. These illusory realities produce much unnecessary enmity, conflict, sorrow, guilt, and pain. Change your inner reality, and the outer will follow. So, I like to jokingly say that my husband and I have very positive illusory realities about each other. it works for us. So what the positive images or ideas or beliefs do, and what all positive ideas do, is they allow you to relax and drop into the present moment where love, peace, contentment, and happiness reside, where you're able to be present to the truth and where love can flow. So positive ideas, positive beliefs, positive self-images, anytime you can use those to reprogram your mind, to counteract negative beliefs, do it, because this is a bridge to the truth about life and the truth about other people. When you are seeing something negative about someone, you're not seeing their true nature. When you're seeing something positive about them, you are seeing their true nature. All of the qualities that we love about other people, their kindness, their wisdom, their patience, their service towards us, their willingness to be with us, to hang in there, all of these things that we love and appreciate about others are their true nature shining through. And so the more we cultivate a positive stance towards others, the more their true nature shines through to us, and the more we experience that. So instead of a vicious cycle, you have a very positive cycle happening between two people. You are loving, accepting, kind, and helpful to your partner, and so naturally that person will respond in kind. When you do the opposite, they will naturally respond in kind, unless they are very saint-like and able to overcome their natural tendency to respond with, like, respond as you're behaving. So we turn things around by turning things around within ourselves. It all starts from a positive inner space within ourselves, from our own kindness, from our own compassion, from our own capacity to see the good in others and not what we don't like, and our own capacity to see people as in this world for their reason and not in this world for our own reason. The ego's attitude towards other people is always, what can you do for me? And what are you doing for me? And it keeps tabs. What have you done for me lately? I've done this, this, this. What have you done? When people start thinking in those terms, their relationship is in deep trouble. That's the ego's way of thinking. And love can't survive in that climate. You have to drop out of that perception, the ego's way of looking at other people, and into the way that essence or true self looks at other people. It looks at them and sees the divine in them. And it celebrates that. And it can even celebrate the foibles and the quirks and the things that the ego doesn't like. You can find your partner's funny ears or messiness or certain kinds of habits. You can find them endearing because there is a place within you that loves even the things that the ego doesn't love. You can find that place, and it behooves you to. You have to. If you're in a relationship long enough, you have to find that place within you where you love even what the ego doesn't love. And then you'll be happy. And that's what it's all about. And I want to also add that if you are living from this place of love and compassion, it is also a place of wisdom. And from this place of wisdom, if someone is treating you badly, consistently, and not loving you back in the way that you deserve, then your own wisdom will remove you from the situation. So this place of love and acceptance and compassion is not a place of victimhood. It's not a place where you are willing to receive abuse from people. You will have the wisdom to know how to handle that. And you will have the wisdom to know how to handle issues between the two of you. From this place of love and compassion and acceptance, you can deal with anything. But from the place of the ego, it's always a fight. So things just don't work from that level. I see that I have a few minutes still. I'm just going to read another page from this book, a couple pages from this book, that are just in general about the importance of our beliefs and how they shape our reality. Beliefs create an illusory reality, which becomes one's reality. This illusory reality stands between you and actual reality. Like a pair of colored glasses, this illusory mind-generated reality changes how reality looks. Like clouds, it hides aspects of reality. Like a magnifying glass, it magnifies the importance of some things while minimizing the importance of others. And like a funhouse mirror, this illusory reality deceives and makes reality seem scary. Beliefs cause you to perceive things that are not there and to not perceive things that are there. Moreover, beliefs cause you to see the world through a singular point of view, the view of me. The me that you feel yourself to be is the sense of yourself that is created and upheld by your beliefs. You also have some images or internal pictures of yourself, but the sense of you is largely comprised of what you believe yourself to be, beliefs about yourself. I'm this and I'm not that. I'm not this and I'm not that. I'm someone who likes this and not that. If you take away all of your beliefs about yourself, you're left with I am, a simple statement of existence, which is the only absolutely true statement you can make about yourself. If you examine your other beliefs about yourself, you discover that none of them is completely true or true all the time, and therefore none of them is true. Your beliefs about yourself only seem to be true and only seem to be true all the time. Your beliefs are more like clothing that the I am puts on to give it a shape, a definition. This clothing is often necessary to navigate your relationships and activities. You may need to tell someone about yourself, what you do, what you have done, what you like or what you don't like, or what you want. However, none of these descriptions or stories about yourself actually defines you or captures who you are, any more than clothing defines a person. Your beliefs give shape to the idea of you and determine how you feel, how you might behave, and what you're likely to do, all of which give you further definition. But stripped of all of your beliefs, who or what are you? That's the big question right there. Who or what are you without your beliefs? So we have two things going on always in this mysterious human life. We have this human self that is defined by all of these beliefs, and that's the character we're playing. And that character has an ego that affects it, that human, negatively to one extent or another. And then we have the divine self, which is what is actually living our life. So it's a very interesting thing that's going on here. So I shall end this for now and pass the mic back to all of you. Thank you for joining me today, and I will see you again next week. And if you have any questions, feel free to write me at Gina, G-I-N-A, at RadicalHappiness.com. Radical Happiness is my website. There's lots on there. And as I mentioned, my book, Choosing Love, is the book that I wrote that is a guide to relationships. So if you want more on relationships, that's where you could go with my materials. So thank you again, and goodbye.